Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to our podcast series on the economy of trust. I'm joined today by Ray Wisbowski, the Chief Marketing Officer at Entrust Data Card. And Ray, I'm really looking forward to having this conversation with you.
I am too, Karen.
So this will be a four-part series where we'll examine what it takes for financial institutions to keep the position of trust they have with consumers intact. We've done research that really does support the fact that consumers trust their financial institutions, particularly to introduce new ways to pay, new methods of opening accounts. They do trust financial institutions with those capabilities, but that comes with a lot of risks that FIs must manage in order to keep that trust and to build upon it. So that's really what we're going to be talking about over the course of these four podcasts. But let's start with the basics. I made the point that our research shows that consumers really do trust their financial institutions, but it's often a conversation that has a lot of debate attached to it. There are some who say consumers really don't like and trust their financial institution. They would rather skip away and do their financial transactions with the fintechs and so forth. What's your point of view on that, and has that changed since the last time we chatted about it?
Well, I think there's been a series of evolutions over the last couple of years, and since the last time we've had a conversation, you do see a push towards what I would term a more flexible financial institution. When we, as we've watched the fintechs evolve, and you have, branchless banks that have come on the scene, virtual banks. You see that there's a push into, trying to attract the consumer to interact with the bank more than just walking into a brick and mortar store, a retail bank outlet, or interacting with an ATM. That there's a striving, from the bank to have more of a daily interaction through a variety of digital channels. What I think, is that that's creating more of a dependence in that or maybe not a dependence, but a conversation between the bank and their customer that allows for them to gain even more trust. I think that at this point in time, you have more ways for consumers to interact. It's not just put my money in a vault, mm-hmm. shut the vault, and hope no one steals the money that's in the vault. Mm-hmm. It really is about having a conversation around how do I run my financial life. And so what banks, I think, have done a very good job of as of late is empowering their consumers with more tools, and they're doing that through a variety of channels, digital being one of the main channels, mobile apps being one of the main channels. And then we see them introducing features and functionalities around those mobile apps that empower them to do more. So pay in different ways, move money in different ways. And I think that's getting us to a place where there is a greater sense of trust, a greater sense of connection to the financial institution.
There's a lot of conversation about identity and compromised identity for all the reasons we know well. And clearly this is an area that that the banks are very focused on, particularly in making consumers feel comfortable that they have their interest at heart, the technology and tools to authenticate the consumer when they are engaging in banking activities. Do you think that's helping?
Well, so I'll build off of what I just said about the multi-channel, multi-touch points that the financial institutions, banks have with their customers. One of the advantages that the bank has is that they have more of a fluid dialogue, able to provide promotions, able to harness the data of that customer and provide them with promotional offers that are meaningful to that customer. The moment that their identity is compromised, the moment that their bank account is compromised, and I'm not talking identity theft where someone gets your credit card and you're able to quickly get that resolved because the payment system is fairly resilient in that way. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about something broader than that, although that is a distinct challenge. But when we talk about identity, and the financial institution providing that access to their customer so they can see what's going on with their accounts, we really need to, you know, the banks first and foremost need to look at how they're protecting that access point. Mm-hmm. So who has access to what and from where?
How do you draw the line with using technology to eliminate all the friction yet keep the consumer reassured that you're looking over their shoulder and everything is okay?
So it's a very good question, and one of the responses that I, as I look at it, I think of you know, meaningful friction is a word that I would focus on, which is mm-hmm. I want to put friction in a interaction when it's meaningful for the end user. Mm-hmm. So banks have the ability with the technology that's available today to give the consumer a lot of choice. Mm-hmm. And one of those choices could be, you know, allowing them to set policies within their banking app or online that says, when it's over this amount, I want to push notification to my mobile phone and let me verify that that's me who's doing that transaction. Or if it's, you know, at certain times. And so there's a lot of functionality that's in the market today that gives the consumer control. Where the bank has to weigh that against their risk policy. So how much risk do they want to take? What do they know about that customer, which they know a fair amount about that customer, and then give them a series of options. But I think that we're in a place where banking is, consumers have more control than ever before in how they can interact in the digital environment. And, you know, banks have more tools available to them to introduce that to their cardholders. And you've seen the advertisements for things like, you know, freeze my card and, you know, all the major brands, I think, now have APIs that allow you to have that control. So it really is about putting control into the hands of the consumers and balancing that against the risk. But, you know, again, the idea of meaningful friction, that you introduce friction only when it's meaningful both to the bank, either to the bank or to the end customer.
Does that also apply to consumer data that may be shared within the financial institution and with others?
That's a very good question. We had talked earlier today about my CEO testifying in front of the U.S. Senate, the Commerce Committee, and one of the questions that was posed to him was exactly that: who owns the data? And, mm-hmm. and he was testifying in specific regards to the large breach of a credit reporting agency. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the question is, I think it's yet to be answered it's certainly not answered in legislation. Mm-hmm. It's not truly answered in commerce. And I think there's still going to be a vetting of who owns that data. I think consumers are saying more and more, I own my data. Mm-hmm. And the technology is now getting to the place where we can give more control to consumers to mm-hmm. say how and when their data is being used. The question is the economics behind data. Mm-hmm. Data is money, yeah. as some have couched it. So it's really comes down to, you know, the consumer demand forcing the hand of those who would hold their data to give them the control over that data.
You mentioned a breach, and we know that there have been many, and they've happened, unfortunately, and we hear more and more about them day by day. We can talk about what things should have been put in place to prevent them, but I want to talk about what happens when a breach happens and what's necessary to get the consumer's trust back. And I think back to the Target breach and how in the first 30 days they really suffered a decline in foot traffic, but it was mostly from people who didn't shop Target very often. Their loyal customers didn't really, I don't want to say it didn't bother them, but it didn't keep them from shopping at Target. So, you know, what is your thought in when it comes to banks and others that have suffered a breach and what has to happen in order to keep the customer's trust intact?
Well, so the interesting thing is there's these two thrusts within the market right now. There's a thrust towards you have to build more and more layers of security into any infrastructure. But then at the same time, you have this fatigue of how many challenge questions can I have?
Right.
How many times do I have to reset my password because I couldn't remember, you know, which combination of the four different variations that I typically use? You know, and so you have this almost dichotomy of you have to increase the security, but you have to reduce the amount of friction that consumers feel as they're coming in. I think that's why we're seeing a push towards things like adaptive authentication, more towards machine learning and artificial intelligence, because it's the behaviors that you and I have are unique to us. When I will create a pattern over time of how I check my accounts or how I move money or how I do certain things. My phone has so many sensors in it that it knows how I, you know, typically swing my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so leveraging all of that biometric data, leveraging all of that intelligence around what machines are doing and how they're interacting and the artificial intelligence of knowing who I am, even more than I can produce with a username and password. Those types of things are helping balance that dichotomy of needing to increase security, but doing it in a way that's easier for the consumer to interact and easier for the bank to trust, because I can't fake some of these things.
Right.
I can't fake a fingerprint. I can't fake my face. You know, there's attempts to do that, but it's, you know, at the same time, it's very challenging to overcome multiple touch points of data that say, you know, you are Karen Webster or I am Ray Wazowski.
You know, it's an interesting dynamic though, because the credentials that are being used against the consumer were breached by another party. And so the banks really have to have things in place to protect themselves and their customers from the unfortunate missteps of others, I guess is the best way to put it. It's an interesting dynamic though.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's only going to get more complex, right, over time. And I don't think that, you know, I've been around for enough time to watch different, you know, legislations or regulations come into play that tried to address some of these things. You know, FFIEC started off initially trying to get more two-factor authentication into the login process to a bank. And so that's when you saw things like the picture coming up, which isn't really a second factor, but it was an attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And they've tried to refine those regulations over time. We will never regulate or legislate fast enough to address the threats that are in the marketplace. So it does fall to the financial institution to always be proactive,
mm-hmm,
in building out security measures that protect identity. I think as we look forward, we're going to see more and more focus on identity. Again, you know, we just testified about the breach, and part of that testimony was really focusing on, you know, how is identity being used within society,
mm-hmm,
and advocating for stronger, more dynamic credentials as opposed to the static credentials that we have today. You could even say that you know, a payment card is a static credential.
Mm-hmm.
It's got got an account number on it that doesn't change unless you've been breached. And so the CVV, which is supposed to be this, you know, secure extra layer of security, is static. It doesn't change until you get a new card. And so some of those things I think are going to have to be looked at, addressed, and there's going to have to be additional controls put in place. But those additional controls, again, focusing on consumers being able to use that technology without having significant interruption to the attempt to use that technology.
I think these are all valid points and certainly things that you and many others are really working hard to address, to protect the consumer and to preserve the trust that consumers do have with their financial institutions. I think regardless of what anyone says, and I heard someone say this just the other day, it's not that banks aren't trusted. Maybe they're not loved, but they certainly are trusted. And I'd rather be trusted than loved. What about you, Ray?
I would rather be trusted than loved. And, you know, from a brand perspective, as InTrust Data Card, trust is kind of at the center of our name. And it's what we try to instill in everything that we build and in the products that we sell. I think as a financial institution, trust is, you may not, as you said, you may not love the way that your bank interacts with you, but you trust that they're going to watch out for you. And that's probably a stronger position over time that you can hold on to that trust and that trust can be extended to maybe other areas of your life as you use those credentials to gain access to other things potentially.
I agree. Well, it's been great getting the landscape prepared for future conversations, Ray. We'll touch on a number of the risks associated with preserving that trust. And I look forward to having that chat because we'll touch on cryptocurrencies next time, which is, I know, a topic we share a great enthusiasm for, but perhaps not in the same way that others have enthusiasm for it. But to be continued, right, Ray?
Absolutely.
It was a pleasure chatting today. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Karen. Thank you.